In this study of Ecclesiastes, I always try and make sure that we end the lesson in the evening looking at the positive side on a positive note, just because the contents of Ecclesiastes has a lot to do with life being a vapor, being meaningless, things that we do. And sometimes it can seem like it's getting someone depressed or getting someone down. When in fact, when we look at it, it's actually guiding us and leading us to those things which are good, right, and righteous. And so as we think on those things, let's keep that in mind as we study. One of the things that we talked about, and I don't want to recap over the last couple weeks, was the fact that you have a man that had tremendous wealth, wisdom, he had the estates, he had the status, and he used those for various reasons, but one of the purposes that he explicitly used it for was to try and find what would make him happy. I've got the capability to do this, so let's go with it. Let's try and find out what's going to make me happy. And I don't think that he's that far-fetched than what many people are in the world today. Whenever I get ready to eat supper, what do? I mean, if we don't eat at home, which that's always the best because, you know, that home cooking is real good, but we think about, well, what restaurant do I want to eat at? What's going to suit me the best? What do I feel like? And so as he went through his life, he wanted to know what was going to make him happy. And he had the means to do that. If we had unlimited wealth, how many of us would spend that money on trying to make ourselves happy? And we think about that. And of course, also just to reiterate, the things that he did, he even points out that these were things that he did apart from God. And so as we go through our class tonight, it's just so encouraging on a positive note to start off with, is that we're all here tonight. And we are all doing something that is absolutely not vain, absolutely not meaningless. What we're doing tonight is the meaning of what we should be doing. Learning, studying the Word, praising God, being with those of like precious faith. So we start every night on this study in a positive way. And so let's think on that as we continue on. All right, here in chapter 1, and we talked about Solomon and we talked about his past, but there was a reason why Solomon received this wisdom. And what was the reason why he received this wisdom of the Lord? Because he asked for it. How many times have we been told in the Scriptures to ask of your Father? How he clothed the lilies of the field. They didn't neither toil nor spin, but he clothed them in their glory. So we're told many places to ask. And so he asks. Now, in his young age, it was an amazing thing for him to ask for what he did, the wisdom to be able to lead his people. He knew he was young. He knew that, and we'll talk about David here in just a second, but he knew what his father had gone through. He was at least old enough to see some of the things that he had to contend with, and it was daunting. So he asked. So the Lord not only gave him this, but he also gave him many other things that he did not ask for. But there were stipulations to those things, just as there is today. The Lord grants us the hope of salvation. Christ came, he died on this earth so that we could have that hope of eternal salvation. Every one of us. Is everybody on this earth that he died for over the ages? Think about how many people, like we talked about, have lived on this earth between the time of Christ and now. Is every one of those going to be saved? He wishes they were. His hope was that they would be. But not everybody takes advantage of those things because there's something that we need to do. And sadly, many people don't search the Scriptures to find out what we should do. And then they do. Maybe it doesn't meet what they want. It doesn't please them. It doesn't bring them the pleasure that they want in life. And so they do something else. Try and do it their way. And any way aside from God's way is the wrong way. Now, Solomon had a lot of riches, a lot of estates from the beginning. Do we understand or know where he got those and why he got those? Okay, going back to David, during the time of David's reign, it wasn't like Solomon's reign. Solomon's reign was more peaceful time. During the reign of David, there was several battles, several things going on between nations. And so David would always have built up his armies. He would have built up stores of food and built up treasuries so that when war came, he had the capabilities to be able to go and do these things and fight and put those things forth. Same thing we do here in the United States today. And so Solomon, whenever he comes, here's all these monies and these stores of food and these things that are there, but yet he has peace, so he's able to use those monies for other things also. So he didn't have to worry about spending all that money for those things. So what does he do? He spends it on a lot of different things, pleasures, paying people to build things, to mine things, to grow things, to go to the other parts of the world and cut down special trees and haul them back. We'll see so many things that he did. But yet, in the end, it didn't bring him pleasure. All right, going down to verse 3, and you'll see this at the top of the questionnaire each week. It says, what profit hath a man of all of his labor which he taketh under the sun? And I think about this a lot as I've gotten older. And it's like everything that you've worked for, everything that you're doing, you know, are you trying to save a bunch of money so you can pass it on to your kids, or trying to save a bunch of money, or trying to do gather a bunch of land? What are you going to do with it? What use is it going to be to you 100 years from now? Well, it's not. And he gets into this whenever he thinks about that. I am going to do all these things. I'm going to build this. I'm going to have this done. I'm going to save this money. I'm going to. And then it bothers him and vexes, a vexation of spirit is what he actually calls it, that he's going to end up leaving this earth and he may have to give that to somebody else and they're not going to care about it. They may not handle the money the same way he does. They may not take care of these things the way that he wanted to. He's going to be out of the picture. Whenever my great-great-great-grandkids arrive, I'm going to be out of the picture. I know how I would like to see them raised, but I'm not going to be here. So going back to what David did before he passed away, try and pass a little bit of knowledge on to your kids as you live. And you'll hear me say this a lot during Ecclesiastes. Do not wait until you think you're on your deathbed to try and pass knowledge on to your kids. Try and pass spiritual advice on to your kids. Do that every day. Do the things that are meaningful each day. And I catch myself on anything that I do. It's like, what meaning does this have? What good is this going to be? And does it matter? And so it just seems to help me out to where maybe I can get my priorities in order a little bit more. Things may not be as important as what I used to think they were.
I was going to say, you know, when you look at Ecclesiastes and the life of Solomon, and what I see is it's a common life for all of us, technically. You know, we may not have as much wisdom or much money as or wealth. We all go through the same process, you know. So what was important, you know, say 10 years ago, when you look back at what you thought was important, now it wasn't that important. You know, as time goes by, just like for Solomon here, we all go through the same process. You know, while you're young, you think, you know, winning those trophies and all that's important, and you get our age, you know, where they've been in a dumpster like 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So they don't mean much to you. So I think we can relate to what Solomon's, the question he posed here. And, you know, we still go through the same thing, like you said, trying to, you know, build your retirement accounts. And, you know, I mean, it's all smart stuff to do, but at the end of the day, you know, you're going to die at some point. And most likely you're going to have money in the bank and it's going to go to somebody else. And you worked hard to do it. We see it all the time at funerals, you know. And after funerals, after estate settlements and things like that.
As we talked about in one of the earlier classes, leading up to this, there's a lot of things that we do that in themselves probably meaningless, but how you do them can have meaning. And what he was talking about right there is just a good example. We're going to need to provide for our family.
So working those jobs and saving that money for things that we know and preparing for the future of what you need in your household, those things can be done and still put God first, because He asks us and requires us to provide for our families. Okay, in verse 4, he starts out with one of four dispensations on areas of life that he touches on. It says, one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and goes down and hastens to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about to the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again to its circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers came thither, and they return again. And so here we're seeing just the nature that he set forth. And we did talk earlier about, you know, this earth has been around since God created it. There's been so many people that have come and gone on this earth. We're going to come and go, as we talked about, like a vapor. But time, it just has that human effect. You can do things just because. You can go climb a mountain because, you know, you'd like it, it's exhilarating, it's fun. But once you climb that mountain and you've met those expectations, you've got that pleasure from climbing that mountain, then it's like, what's next? And it's not just climbing that mountain, it's whatever you do. What's next? And that mountain is not going to care whether you climbed it or not. It's probably had a lot of people climb it. That mountain is going to just continue to be there throughout time. And so you look at why the things that we do can become meaningless. Does this mean go through life and not have pleasure of any kind? Just no, on the contrary, it is taught throughout here, not here in Ecclesiastes only, but throughout the Bible, that we need to take life and we need to live it and enjoy from the workings of our labors. And he talks about that later on. But we need to make sure that we put God first. And it's simple. But sometimes we want to be entertained and we want to do it quicker and we want to do it better. What we think would be better. And then also death. He, you know, even though he doesn't talk about death here, he's just going on about the fact, and we'll talk about death more when we get into Ecclesiastes 11, is he goes on more here, and he just kind of lets you know that you are temporary. You're not permanent. Even Methuselah, who lived, 969 years? Many of them lived over 900 years at that time. They were a little bit more of a vapor than our life will be, but yet still a vapor. They were here, they're gone. And nobody is going to know who Bruce Parker is three generations from now, unless they look me up on YouTube or whatever, if it's still around. I don't know what they'll have around. But just keeping in mind that we're just pilgrims. We sang several songs, but we're just pilgrims traveling through this world. So pointing out, some of the things that he points out here also just is amazing, because it points out also his knowledge of the earth. Things that scientists, you know, say, hey, we discovered this back in 1938, or we discovered, you know, that, hey, the oceans have currents in them. And they move around, and they keep the oceans from going up to the cold and then down to the warm, and it keeps everything going. And then the water goes back into the secret places and come up. I lived out in Alaska on one of the last islands that strings out towards Russia, in the Aleutian Islands. Not a big island, 20 miles by 20 miles wide. But there was a lot of fresh water and springs and lakes on that island. It's just amazing, out in the middle of the Bering Sea, and you have these fresh water, and it tasted great. It's cold and pure, just. And so it's amazing to see these things, and the way that the Lord has formed this earth. But the earth continues on, and it's temporary. But he points out several things here that science just decides later on, hey, this is what. And there's several places in the Bible where that's at, but that's off on a tangent. Verse number 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new, it hath already been of old time which was before us? There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. And so now he starts talking about everything that man has accomplished from the time of creation up to the time that Solomon was king, and including all the different things that he worked on. And you can imagine, with his wisdom and stuff, he probably built viaducts and had some kind of plumbing stuff going on. There was probably a lot of knowledge and wisdom there that he was able to work with. But all of the things that is under the sun here on this earth, there was nothing new. Sure, we can take the things that are here on this earth, and we can invent new things that man has never used before, but the means for those has always been here. Did they have the means and the materials to build computers back in Solomon's day? Well, all the materials were there. Just the knowledge of how to use them, how to melt them, how to design them, how to make them into plastic and metals and things. They haven't figured it out yet. It's like we said, Adam knew what gravity was, but he didn't sit down and do a thesis on it. He didn't theorize about it, not that we know of. So there's nothing new under the sun.
Bruce, when Papa does nothing new under the sun, he's talking about the things in this context. The things that have been is the things that will be. That is the sun rising, the sun setting, the rivers flowing into the ocean and back. that's the sort of thing. It's not computers or a technology, but the context, that's what's not new under the sun. The earth has always been this way, and after we've died, the earth will continue to be this way.
Right. I mean, everything that he has put in motion, we're not going to change anything about the earth. You know, we may pollute it, but we're not going to change anything about the earth. We're not going to change the gravitational pull. We're not going to change the fact of what the moon does for the earth or what the stars and the things do. We're not going to change those things. They're going to be forever. Nothing is going to be new. Very good point. So he says there is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come. And so when you think about the people that we talked about that were here in the past, there's a few people that have been written down in history that you can read about, find out about. But even in the future, he's saying, you know, people in the future aren't going to remember all the things that we did here. All of us aren't going to remember half of what was said tonight, probably, unless we go back and we listen to it on our website. But everything that the Lord has done from the beginning of time has been consistent and without fail. We don't have to go to bed wondering, well, I sure hope the sun rises tomorrow because, you know, my crops need that sun. Or, I sure hope that it rains sometime in this year. Maybe I shouldn't plant my crops because maybe it won't rain at all this year. And so, you know, we don't worry about that stuff. And if we do worry, we shouldn't. These are things that God has set in motion. I know the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And whenever I die, the sun's going to come up that day. I, the preacher, was king over Jerusalem, or over Israel, verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and search out wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. As we talked about before, the Greek word hevel and stuff, it's breath, it's a vapor, it's there and then it's gone. Or that it's just whatever we're doing, it comes to naught, it's useless. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come into great estate. I have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart and my had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceived that this too was also vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. The last thing he says in this chapter here, for in much wisdom is much grief. And he's going to talk about that later on also. And so you want to sit there and you say, I want to know more. I want to know more. I want to know more. That's going to satisfy me. I want to know why. I've got a couple of grandchildren that will ask you 2,500 questions whenever you're doing something. Why is this there? Why is it? And sometimes you're not sure whether you want to keep on answering them. But it's inquisitive minds. They're questionable. We do that as we go through our life. We want to know why things are done that way. Why things are done this way. I'll tear something up. I'm not very good about putting things back together, but I'll tear something up so that, you know, I can see why it's done or how it should be done, but it doesn't mean I'm going to put it back together. Go ahead.
This is not, you know, heavenly wisdom or godly wisdom. He's talking about earthly wisdom. So there's a lot of things that happens here on earth. We see it now more than he did, probably because of the internet and TV. You know, there's the bad news all over the place. That's what he's talking about. He sees all the things going on under the sun, and there's a lot of bad going on.
Yeah.
And it brings, causes grief.
I remember the days whenever I felt comfortable looking on the internet to find the answers to some things. But now, there's so much garbage in, garbage out, that when you go to try and find something, it's like, is this true? Or is this something that someone's just put in there? And so you end up having to search deeper and try and figure out what's true and what's not. And that goes because it's fallible, because man is doing this. Search the Scriptures if you want something that's infallible. You don't have to worry about when you go to the Scriptures, is this true? Is this not true? And that's what he points out. Doing the things, putting God first and using His Word, these things are going to bring meaning in life. Now, as he goes through this last part, he's also talking about people that they may spend their career or spend their time building up their career, building themselves up the ladder and trying to work towards getting a status in life. Now, I know some of the happiest people that I have ever met in my life are farmers. They work the ground, they toil, they see the fruits of their labor. They handle their own time. They know. They tell themselves when they need to get up and go do this. They tell themselves when. Sometimes the cows do that. They tell them when they do that. And they're happy. But sometimes you see people that have a lot of stuff, a lot of status, a lot of money, but they don't seem happy. Or maybe they even commit suicide. And we wonder, how in the world can someone like that commit suicide? They've got everything. Well, they don't have everything. You can have everything, but if you don't have God, then you probably would be depressed, trying to find that happiness here with this life. You got stress, anxiety, things that you don't have to put up with in this life if you put God first. Why deal with stress and anxiety and worrying about whether or not we're getting older? Why do we worry about getting older? It's not going to change anything. We can't make ourselves younger. We can make ourselves maybe more fit physically. We're not going to make ourselves younger. We're going to leave everything that we have behind. We're going to leave this body behind. Some people, and he talks about, I set my heart to find wisdom. Now, we're talking about someone that has the wisdom to lead the people of the nation of Israel. God gave this to him, but he also gave him great wisdom beyond what any man has ever had. And so he sought, I want to know more. I'm going to know what's going on. And if we look at chapter 9, in verse 13 through 18, what does he say there? Somebody that's got that, read that. Chapter 9, verse 13 through 18. And I hope I wrote that down right that way.
The wisdom I have seen also under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he has by wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard, rather than this shout of the ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good.
So in his search for wisdom,
and looking at all the aspects of wisdom, you can see that's another aspect of wisdom. There can be one person that's wise, and what he does can save a nation. We've seen many times where a person that put God first has caught the favor of God and has saved people from being destroyed. But he's saying that wisdom is much better than strength. Now, here in the United States, we rely a lot on strength. We look at ourselves as the most powerful nation on this earth. You know, Rome used to think that they were the most powerful nation on earth. Many other nations. And at that time they were, but what happened to them? And so pride cometh before a fall. And we also are told that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If you fear the Lord, then you've taken the first step at being wise. If you don't fear the Lord, then you don't understand the Lord. You don't understand that He holds your soul and the future of your soul in His hand. He has given you this life to begin with. If you don't understand that, then you're missing everything. And everything that you'll do is meaningless and a breath and a vapor, vanity. Good people in this lifetime, good people, good Christians, will die tragically. There's some bad people in this world that will live a good, long, prosperous life. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the fact that just what he's pointing out is that living life is not like building blocks. It's unpredictable. There's a lot of things in your life that are unpredictable, that are beyond your control. But you need to take care of the things that are under your control. One of the things that is living your life as a Christian. Searching the gospel, realizing that He gave us this life, finding out why and what He wants us to do with this life, and understanding that we have that hope of salvation through Him, and how do we achieve that, and then taking the necessary steps to do that.
Not be made straight. In chapter 7, verse 13, consider the work of God, for who can make straight that which He has made crooked? And so man in his wisdom cannot unravel the things that God has done. That's why, looking at the context, why wisdom in wisdom there is much grief. Because no matter how smart we become, we're not smarter than God. And what God has made crooked, we cannot straighten. And so there's the frustration. All of our wisdom can't do what we want to do. Therefore, it's grief.
Exactly. And we do the same thing with the gospel.
We try to take what is straight and we try to make it crooked so that we can bend it to our way also. So we're always trying to do something different. So life itself is not meaningless. It's just the things that happen in life, it's just like an enigma. You know, it's going to happen. There's things that are going to happen that's unpredictable. Bad things may happen to good people. Good things may happen to bad people. It doesn't mean God is making that happen. You remember, we have free will. We have things that happen. We have consequences that happen. But that being said, He promises us that if we ask, believing, put God first, that we should consider the lilies of the field and how much more will He do for us.
Chapter 1, you know, and talking about all these different kind of cyclical nature of life back early in the chapter, and then what he mentioned there in verse 15. And God has made the earth and the universe the way that He wants it, and He has put certain boundaries or limits, you know, that we can't go beyond, we can't change. But that doesn't mean that our life, we can't change ourselves, or we can't have an influence on someone else. You know, when we're young, I mean, when I started out preaching, I think most young preachers and just young people in general, you know, think that they're going to change the world, you know, with whatever their interest or occupation is. And after a while, you realize you as one person can't change the whole world, but you can change your world. You can change the people that you have an association with. You can certainly change yourself. So like you've been pointing out here, I think just the perspective that we have, you know, in life, if we take all the blessings that God has given us and we say, how can I use all these to God's glory? Instead of just using them for ourselves, even though somebody may not remember us in 50 or 100 years, you know, it, as far as God is concerned, we have made a difference.
Exactly. All right, I'll end with this here.
Just thinking about the gifts that God has given us, and as we go through tomorrow and we have our set-aside day of Thanksgiving, of which we've talked about that here before, and just in the fact that every day is a day of Thanksgiving for us as Christians because of the way that we view life and the way that we do things differently from the world. But friendship and families, having good meals, a sunny day, we're not guaranteed those things, but we're thankful for those things. But at some point in time, we need to come to the realization and adopt a posture of total truth with God. That's what we're going to deal with. We understand that we have total truth with God. And that truth that God has given us frees us up in our life to experience life itself. So the way that we experience life as a Christian, we should be very thankful for, because we could be experiencing life as a non-Christian and as someone that is lost. So think on those things as we go through to Thanksgiving in our prayers tomorrow.